Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a moment, check us out at consumerguide.com. All sorts of good stuff there, especially if you are looking for a new car or truck. In studio with me, live in person, is Jill Simonello, managing editor, and I'm sorry, contributing editor at consumerguide.com, North American Car of the Year juror. Old habits die.
I know.
And obstinate freelancer.
How are you?
Obstinate.
That is very descriptive.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Want to hear a funny, not car-related story?
Sure.
Steve and Johnny, I do their show every other week, let me pick the bumper music while I'm on their show.
I'm sorry?
It's for me, it's the biggest thrill of a lifetime.
But not for anybody else.
So when I checked the weather early last week, it was supposed to rain all week.
Okay.
So I picked songs about rain. That was my theme.
Okay.
Good music.
And then
however,
it didn't rain?
It didn't rain all week. But then Saturday, all hell broke loose.
You brought the rain.
In the Midwest, and it was totally appropriate.
Yes.
So that happened. And it rained like crazy. I was test driving the Toyota Sequoia 1794 edition.
Okay.
And I drove that through the storm and kind of missed the storm. I was going northwest or Northwest Highway outside of Chicago, and I got some rain. But when I turned around to come back, everything was, there were trees all over the road. There was puddles everywhere. There was flooding. Somehow I missed it and I was in it.
Yeah, you know, I got, so there was rain earlier last week, like Tuesday, I think, was it Tuesday? And I just got the Toyota 4Runner Trailhunter. And there was like flash flood warnings, and I was getting all the alerts and all the things. And I was literally driving through water that was probably 2 feet high. And I was like, bring it! Bring it! Bring all the water! I can do it in this truck.
I don't know if I drove through 24 inches of water, but
yeah.
I certainly drove through more than a foot of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm in a Sequoia.
Whatever.
I'm good.
Well, the Trail Hunter has like the spout, too, so you can ford water a little bit more.
That spout, which is functional, makes funny noises.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been trying to figure it out. I'm like, is it the engine? Is it? But yes. Okay. Now that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
it's driving me nuts.
If you have the passenger side window down and you're decelerating, you'll hear the craziest noise.
No. It's even when you accelerate, it sounds like somebody's turning on a buzzsaw.
Yeah. And air is being pulled through a snorkel.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what that is, it's for extreme off-roading.
Yes.
And fording streams and stuff like that. And also it looks cool.
It does. It looks very cool.
A lot of people have fake snorkels.
This is not
which
that.
Which is kind of sad.
Yes.
Really. Speaking of kind of sad, you remember my jubilation when Volkswagen handed Rivian a big bag with $1 billion in it?
Yeah.
And I thought, they're set. They're home free. Everything is good now.
Mm.
Guess how much money Rivian lost in Q2?
$1 billion.
$1 billion. $1.1 billion. They just lost it. It was like they went to Vegas and they just betted on 31 Black.
And
yeah, it didn't go well.
Yeah.
Rivian has trouble. And it's amazing how much trouble they have because they've been in this business for a while.
Yep.
They are selling vehicles in some volume. And they are selling well-reviewed vehicles.
Yep.
So the stuff should be here. Plus, they have cash coming in because they were selling vans to Amazon.com, though I don't know where that's at.
Right.
They had a contract for 100,000 units, and I don't think they're anywhere near that number yet. Although around here,
we see them a lot.
Anyway, they lost $1.1 billion in Q2, which works out to, they sold 10,700 vehicles. They lost about $100,000 of vehicles sold. Now, I realize that things don't work evenly like that. Things are amortized. You take write-downs and things. But still, dang.
Yeah.
That is nowhere near making money.
No.
They should be close to breaking even on stuff now. So if you're an investor there, you're a little worried.
Maybe.
Maybe a lot worried.
You know, I have to say, everywhere I go, I am seeing Rivians everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Good-looking trucks.
Yeah.
People who own them like them.
Yeah.
So the problem is they can't make them affordably enough. And by affordably, I mean they can't make them work for them. They're selling them for what is apparently a reasonable price. They're selling some. So that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Here's another bummer along those lines. Are you ready?
Okay.
The de-escalation, not the de-escalation, but the basically the removing the teeth out of EPA standards for fuel economy means that manufacturers no longer have to worry about carbon tax credits.
Right.
Meaning that they don't have to worry about hitting fuel economy numbers, and thus they don't have to buy credits if they miss those numbers.
Right.
Stellantis, for example, was a big buyer of tax credits, of carbon credits, and Tesla was a big seller of them. Well, that's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
And I've got some numbers here. These are estimates. Tesla, what was this? Tesla sold $890 million worth of tax credits in Q2.
Okay.
So almost $1 billion in one quarter revenue from just selling electric vehicles as a bonus to selling the vehicles. And Rivian made $150 million selling those credits. Those credits are all gone now.
Yeah.
That is money they're not going to get.
Ooh.
At least in the U.S.
Yeah.
There's still the EU.
Right.
But that's a thing. So that's bad. Here's another one. More EV bad news.
Okay.
Maybe you heard this one. The Lucid Gravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there.
Yep.
Lucid's first non-big sedan-like car.
Yeah, the first SUV. Yeah.
It looks good. It's well-reviewed. It's got a lot of range. And it's not selling.
Yeah.
One report said that they sold 9.
Ooh.
So far this year.
Ooh. Ow.
Single digit, 9. There's other numbers that put that number higher, but they're still depressing.
Yeah.
And Lucid doesn't report directly, so they're just saying the number is higher. But I don't know what the problem is there. It's expensive, right? It starts at $82,000. I don't know if that's the problem.
I would not think that's the problem, because people who buy that car, you know, they're not afraid of that price tag. And I don't know. I mean, I have friends who are like, when you get that as a test car, you have to bring it to us, because they're seriously thinking about buying it. And I haven't seen it yet. So I don't know who's getting the opportunity to review these cars, but it's not regular,
a lot of reviews out
there. It's not like regular people.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. But it's kind of depressing, because we sort of thought this was going to save Lucid.
Yeah.
Now, Lucid's owners are largely the Saudi wealth fund, right? Deep pockets, right? That, like, the wealth fund is worth almost $1 trillion. So funding this operation isn't killing them. However, at some point you cut your ties just because you don't want to lose money on something. And they're losing money on this, and I don't know what's going on there either. So Lucid and Rivian, like, you know, fingers crossed for those guys. They were new companies, novel product, good product.
Yes.
And then Lucid, too, had some proprietary battery technology. The Lucid Air Sapphire, one of their trim levels was capable of 500 miles on a charge. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no one wants big sedans, and no one seems to want their big crossover, unless that changes.
I think that's going to change. I think maybe they're just ramping up production, and you know, they just haven't gotten the vehicles in hands to
hopefully
create the conversations yet.
Hopefully. I mean, it's been out there for a while, so that's the depressing part of this.
Yeah.
There is now, they announced today, a $7,500 rebate. It's only on the lease, but most people in this price class lease anyway.
Probably, yeah.
So it's a lease buy down.
Yeah.
So that helps you with the price. All right. You saw this maybe? Crazy QX80s?
Yes. I was like, what? Yes. I had to think, like, it's been a long weekend. I had to think about that.
Infiniti, kind of hurting right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose two models that they used to import from Mexico, the QX50 compact crossover and the QX55 fastback.
Mm-hmm. I liked the QX55, yeah.
Coupe-looking version of that. Those are going away. They're imported from Mexico, and that doesn't work anymore. Thank you, tariffs. But they're doing off-road versions and sport versions of the giant QX80 SUV.
Yep.
Maybe. Right now, we're seeing them
in concept form at
Monterey Car Week at the Quail. I don't exactly know what the Quail is.
I have never been. I just know people go, and they wear pretty
dresses. Nice.
Big hats.
It's like a lawn party.
Yes.
You drink Pimm's.
Pimm's and lemonade.
Yeah. But the cars look cool.
Yes.
It's nice to see Infiniti making news.
Well, and I will say this isn't completely radical. Infiniti in 2020 did compete in the Rebel Rally with the QX80.
I don't remember that. All right.
Well, so a couple of our automotive colleagues actually were piloting the vehicle. Nicole Wakeland, who has been a guest host for me when you were out about a year ago, she was the driver. And then Alice Chase, who is more on the influence side of things, she was the navigator.
Yeah, QX80 is a big off-road ready body-on-frame truck. What is that called? The Nissan Patrol. That's the vehicle it's based on. And that's a serious off-roader.
Yep.
So this isn't crazy. It's just funny that they take a serious off-roader, dress it up in a tuxedo, and then still with the tuxedo on, it's putting on hiking boots.
Yes. Well, you know, it's a look. I'm trying to get somebody from Infiniti on to talk about this.
I would like that.
Yeah,
I would like that very much.
Yeah.
All right, that's your job.
I'm working on it. They didn't say no. How's that? They actually replied to me and they didn't say no.
That's good. The QX65, a coupe version of the QX60 midsize SUV, on the way.
Yes.
That looks good.
Yeah.
So some news at Infiniti, and they're getting rid of their low-end stuff that maybe wasn't even brand appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. It's just nice to see some action there.
Yeah, and I think they've got stuff next year.
If 18 months ago, if you were going to ask me about a brand that was going to die in the U.S., I might have said Infiniti. But now it seems like there's some action there. Also, the QX80 probably going to sell well in the way that the Escalade sells for Cadillac.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which, this is not on my list, but maybe you saw this. The redesigned Lincoln Navigator is very nice.
Yes.
My review is up. They killed the base version.
Huh.
The base price, the price of entry for a Navigator went from about $80,000 to more than $100,000 in a model year. And it's not so much that they raised prices, they just killed the bottom end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like Escalade, the price for entry, is about that, too. So
it's actually cheaper.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like $93,000.
Okay.
Unbelievably, I checked that in case you...
in case it came up in conversation. In Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I'm at the health club. Hey, Tom. That never happens, by the way.
Mm.
All right. Interesting car. We touched on it last week a little bit. The Acura ADX.
Yes.
You have sat in this thing.
I have sat in it.
You've driven this
I've
thing.
I've driven it.
Have you eaten chili in it?
I've not eaten chili in it. I think I brought chili here.
But you purchased chili while sitting in it.
I did purchase chili while sitting in it.
Yeah.
And thank goodness for the red interior.
So tell us what the ADX is, because it's interesting.
Yeah, so this is a new compact SUV from Acura. It's the new entry level into the SUV lineup. It is based on the HRV, the Honda HRV platform. And it is, I think, reasonably priced vehicle with some really nice finishing touches. And I liked it. I did not love it.
That is overwhelmingly the response to that vehicle.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it gives Acura something to sell to young, wealthy urbanites.
Or just young
you don't need
class.
You don't need to be that wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting too.
Yeah.
But just a little bit about Acura. They just killed the TLX.
Mm-hmm.
That's the midsize sedan that was not selling at all. I have numbers here. TLX, they sold fewer than 3,000 so far this year.
Okay.
The ADX, which is brand new, 200 in the first quarter, 4,500 in the second quarter. So it's now online
starting
and selling.
To ramp up.
And it looks like it's selling pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going for this vehicle. The 1.5 liter engine delivers 190 horsepower, and it is okay powered. If you are not an aggressive driver, like, you don't need anything more than that. But the problem I had, so I live in the city and I park up a ramp that's 22 degrees. And so I have to go up this ramp to get into my parking space. And I usually back into my spot. I did not have enough power to back up that ramp. So I had to start pulling forward into the, to kind of do a little dance inside my, like, it kept like going forward down the ramp. And then I would like, it was a really awkward thing.
Okay. I got to ask, was it not enough power or some complication with the CVT automatic? Although it should be a fixed gear in reverse.
Yeah. I don't
That's
know what
very
that
weird.
It was very weird. And I like would punch it and it would just like kind of like I was struggling up a 22-degree ramp. So, but going backwards. So when I was going forward, it was a little bit easier. And you know, it's small enough that I could do a like 20-point turn and then back into my space so I could nose out. But I thought it was a little bit wimpy, but not completely bad. If you're not an aggressive driver, it's fine. But the biggest problem I had with it was just the overall noise that creeps into the cabin from the engine and the CVT. It was just
That's disappointing.
Yeah, it was like,
and that's sort of the nature of a CVT.
Yeah, it was just, it was very, like, I think that was the bigger problem. It wasn't the power, it was like the sound, and then it made you feel like you were not.
So for people listening who don't know what we're talking about, most transmissions are stepped gear automatics.
Yeah.
So when you hear 6-speed automatic, 8-speed automatic, there are 6 or 8 gears that you roll through on the way to your speed. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. And a CVT doesn't do that.
No.
There's an infinite number, theoretically, there's an infinite number of ratios, mm-hmm. and it's always sliding mm-hmm. in those ratios. That's actually good for efficiency and actually good for power, not power, acceleration, but it doesn't feel good. And if you were old enough to remember step gear automatics, mm-hmm. these are troubling sometimes mm-hmm. to you. Now, that said, Subaru and Honda have done an excellent job with CVTs.
Yeah.
Actually, so has Nissan now. Nissan had some problems, but they're good. So compare this car to, like, the Mazda CX-30, which is, Mazda CX-30 is not as inexpensive as it could be for a subcompact crossover, but it's also wonderful.
Yeah, you know, so I will say I really like how, like, Mazda CX-30 is very sporty, and I like how it drives. It's compact, and it to me, that has the right amount of power and the right amount of pep, and it just feels really good. But the tech, to me, is a little bit of an obstacle, because you have that rotary dial that you have to use to no touch screen.
Generally unpopular.
I mean, you get used to it. And I know people who own Mazdas and they're like, oh, I love it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I like
it. So it doesn't bother me, but it's not my favorite. And when you're going, like, if you are using Apple CarPlay, touching the screen is just easier. And so that, to me, is a little bit dated on the Mazda, whereas the Acura ADX has the wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It has a touchscreen, and it feels a little bit more modern.
Which one would you rather take on a long drive across the country?
Ooh, that's a tough question. Mazda seats have gotten kind of uncomfortable lately, and I did drive the ADX down to Indianapolis and back and thought those seats were incredibly comfortable, which the Honda HR-V seats, not comfortable at all. So I found the Acura ADX to be comfortable. And it's probably been more than a year since I've driven the CX-30, so I don't remember the comfort. Now, if I were just zipping around town, running errands, coming up to, you know, Palatine, Illinois from Chicago, Mazda CX-30 every day, all day.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my daughter to be interested in the CX-30.
Right.
However, she has sworn to herself to get a color she likes, and the Mazda CX-30 does not come in interesting colors.
What color does she want?
Yellow.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one.
Like, we drove the Nissan Kicks.
Okay.
And that comes in a great yellow.
Yes.
The problem with the Kicks is, to get everything you want, including heated seats, it's no longer a bargain, because you have to get the sunroof package.
Ugh.
Very expensive to get heated seats.
Yes.
So you have to get the top trim level of 3 trim levels plus an expensive package.
Mm-hmm.
However, it might be worth it.
Well, because then all-wheel drive, too. Oh, and speaking of the yellow Kicks, it just popped up on the screen in front of us.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. I really like the Kicks. I thoroughly enjoyed test driving that.
So the Acura ADX is out now. Prices range from, I had this somewhere, $36,000 to $45,000 versus the HR-V, $28,000 to $32,000. So your big bump.
Yeah, and the version I was driving was the A-spec with the advanced package. So it had
all the car, yeah.
And I think it was as tested at about 46.
So Acura, little lineup shakeup, right? They added the Integra 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which is basically a very nice Civic.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very nice HR-V.
Mm-hmm.
That they've added to lineup. So volume's going to be up at Acura.
Yeah.
Question or not if this is good for the brand, but the Acura brand, I think, has lost some definition over time.
Yeah.
So maybe they can refine that in the way that Infiniti seems to be grappling for an identity and maybe finding it.
Yeah.
So this car, like it, love it, lump it?
I liked it. I didn't love it.
Don't say lump it.
No lumping.
Okay.
No lumping.
Yeah.
There are very few cars I would lump. most of them don't have Apple CarPlay, but I really
don't make me start talking about the Cordoba.
I will not. But I liked it. I think it's a solid car. The interior is really nice. My test vehicle had the red leather, which was gorgeous, and I think it's an attractive vehicle. But I think they need to work on the NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. They need to stop some of that noise from coming into the cabin, and I think it would be a much better experience.
So it hasn't been fully accurized.
Yeah.
That's an unsayable word.
It is.
All right. There it is. That's your review of the Acura ADX. I look forward to driving it. I don't have it on my list. I was going to talk about my list. I have so many electric vehicles coming. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
That's a great car. I know the next 3 months of cars now.
Okay.
Super excited. All right. After the break, we talk to Robert Colangelo.
Yes.
Of Green Sense Radio. That should be a good show.
Yeah.
Good chat.
This is the show.
All right. We'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. Jill, how's it going?
It second time you've asked me that. It's still going well.
Yeah. Well, something could have changed in the last 22 minutes.
That's true. I did start eating the cinnamon donut that you brought for me, thankfully.
That's a mood brightener.
It is a mood brightener, and it's like a cinnamon twist this week instead of the powdered cinnamon donut.
It's called the sugar twist.
Okay.
It's extra cost.
Okay.
It's not on the regular donut rack. It's in the display case.
Ooh.
Actually, all of these, Long John's too.
Blech.
So special week. What blech?
Blech. Thank you for bringing me cinnamon. I appreciate you.
Last week, I got a vanilla Long John to take home.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter said blech.
Yeah, your daughter's a smart woman.
No, because she said that Long John shouldn't be vanilla.
Mm. Okay, right. So now you've got chocolate Long Johns for her.
All right. We could talk social media later. On the phone is my good friend Robert Colangelo. He's an entrepreneur, radio host, and an author with a passion for sustainability and innovation. Robert, how are you, sir?
Great, Tom. It's always good to talk to you and hear you on the radio.
It is good to talk to you today, Robert. Now, before we get going with a very interesting conversation, you have some news about the Green Sense show.
Yes, we did our last show July 31st, and that was with you. So as a longtime featured guest, I thought it was only fitting that we would air the last show with you because we looked at so much change in mobility that I thought that was a great way to end things.
I have always enjoyed being a part of that show. I always felt honored. I always felt smart being a part of that show. And one of the great things about...
And I always felt less smart when I talked to you because you're so knowledgeable.
We would have the same... We would finish taping the show and then talk for another half hour about the same topic. That was the kind of conversations we had. So I'm kind of bummed out about this, Robert, but can people still listen to back episodes?
Yes, on Podbean, you could go on greensenseshow.com, and all our past episodes are on there. But, you know, Tom, it's not something to be bummed out about. We were on air for 15 years.
Yes.
And we watched the sustainability issue, you know, change over the years from its infancy to, I would say, an advanced area, and also go through ups and downs depending on what president was in office and what focus that administration had on sustainability. So I'm very happy with what we've done. I hope we got the word out and that we helped make the world a better place to live.
Well, it was a great show, and I was proud to be a part of it. It's funny, too, the range of topics that we covered over time. When you and I first met, we were discussing the Chevrolet Volt, extended range electric vehicle, a vehicle that no one understood. And we went on to discuss electric vehicles, which most people didn't understand. So it always seemed like we were helping fight the battle for information, and I really enjoyed that.
And now, Tom, looking back, the things that we didn't understand seem so simple.
They do. And it's funny. And I've made this point a couple of times. Up until relatively recently, people were kind of afraid of hybrids, which is kind of strange because they've been around for a long time. And Toyota has made them so normal and so simple, people shouldn't fear them. But now that we're afraid of electric vehicles, hybrids are flying off the shelf. Like you can't sell a vehicle anymore without a hybrid version of it. And Toyota is going all hybrid with most of its lineup. So the battle for information is slowly won, and people are being moved reluctantly into a higher tech, more efficient era.
Well, they say a mind is like a rubber band. Once it's stretched, it doesn't return to normal. So when you're exposed to new things, people are reluctant to change. But then after a while, the things that were once new seem easy. And the same with the hybrid. You know, that was a confusing thing at first. I remember the first Prius I drove in where it would show how the energy would transfer, mm-hmm. when it would run off the gas and when it would run off the electric. And it just seems so advanced and complicated. And now it seems, mundane. So, yeah, I think that's just human nature.
It's funny, too, because I remember the Ford Fusion mm-hmm. had this thing where you would build a tree while you were driving. Where you would
put the leaves on the tree, uh-huh. right?
Yeah. And you would, I guess, grow a tree. Yeah. Grow it, not build a tree. But yeah, if you did the thing like not to brake too aggressively, because if you hit the brakes too hard, you were not maximizing regenerative yeah. braking. And if you accelerated too hard, you were obviously wasting gas. So yeah, I always had a dead tree.
I had no leaves. Yeah. I had no leaves on my tree.
So, Robert, you and I were talking earlier this week, and there's a topic you really wanted to cover, and you challenged me to come up with what it meant automotively, and that is counter-urbanization. And I didn't really know this, but globally, cities are shrinking.
Hmm. Yes, and, I thought I'd take a leap here and maybe do something a little different than maybe your listeners are used to. But when I look at sustainability, you know, the automobile has come a long way. Manufacturing facilities and cars are much more sustainable than they were 10 years ago. They're creating less emissions, less pollution, and a lot less waste. And they're using energy much more efficiently. But if we look back at past automotive operations, both manufacturing facilities and all the facilities that it takes to make a car, both the raw materials and the parks component, they've left a legacy of blight in many, many areas around the country. And to your point that you just mentioned, did you know that according to Yahoo Finance, nearly 15,000 American cities are projected to lose population by the year 2100?
Wow. No, I did not know that.
And if you look at that, you could see that some cities are experiencing slow growth, while others are actually shrinking, not the size of the city, but the population and the economy. And then we have something we call dying cities. And the shrinking and dying cities are really most visible, you guessed it, right here in the Midwest and the Northeast states, the old cold part of our country that we affectionately refer to as the Rust Belt. Mm. And you could see these shuttered factories and abandoned mills. And they dot the landscape almost like perspiration stains from our industrial past. They're blight on the properties. And what you see is these were once thriving economies where we saw coal, steel, textiles, and autos being manufactured. And when these industries closed, the jobs vanished, people moved out, the tax base shrank. And some cities slipped into what I call a death spiral, and that's what makes them the dying city, yeah. is they have half the residents, twice the infrastructure, and not enough revenue to sustain city services or attract new people to those cities. So that was what I started thinking, is that when this starts to happen, and we've got this large amount of cities that are shrinking, and then you've got sophisticated cities like San Francisco and Austin and Denver that are bringing all this new technology like Waymo and ride-sharing services and Uber and electric car charging networks, are we starting to get a transportation divide in our country where not only are these cities in a death spiral, but they're not getting any of these new sustainable mobility technologies? And that's what I wanted to talk a little about.
Yeah, and it's an absolutely great question. And one of the interesting things about declining city populations is that I think that the business case for ride-hailing, ride-sharing, or mostly ride-hailing and autonomous ride-hailing is basically urban areas, right? And I think that the further you move away from a concentrated a population base, the more difficult it is to make money using those services.
Yeah.
Like you see ride hailing a lot less out here in Palatine, which is still pretty population dense, than you do in Chicago.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere in Chicago.
And the other issue there too is if people move out of the cities, they're going to need vehicles and affordability is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a divide or chasm in affordability between haves and haves not, it's going to be difficult for people to afford vehicles if they were going to make the move to ride hailing or ride sharing. And one of the things that Elon Musk had said years ago before he was as controversial as he is was that the answer for affordable electric vehicles is ride hailing. Like there's a point where people just can't afford cars and they shouldn't bother.
Yes. Well, first, I'm remiss. I didn't say hello to Jill. Hello, Jill. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
And I wish I had some of those donuts you were talking about.
Oh, they look good.
The cinnamon donut is very good. The Long John's, I mean, meh.
What's also funny about that, Tom, when I started looking at some examples of dying cities, a lot of them are tied to the auto industry, at least in the Midwest and the Northeast. So, for example, Gary, Indiana.
Mm.
That's Steel City. It was once held, I don't know if you know this, but it was the city of the future. It was a very progressive city. At its peak, it had 180,000 residents.
Wow.
Today, the population is less than 70,000. And not only do they have less people, but they have this legacy of blight and pollution.
Yeah.
There's tens of thousands of abandoned homes. There's high commercial property vacancy rates, and there's very little economic opportunity there. And that's a good example of a dying city. And a lot of that steel was used to make cars. And it went into the automotive industry that fueled the Midwest. Another company and a tie to another city is Centralia, Pennsylvania. Do you know about this city?
I don't.
This was a coal mining town, and coal goes into coke, which goes into steel making. And that was in Pennsylvania. And is now completely abandoned. There was an underground fire that started in 1962, and it's still burning, and it left the town with terrible air pollution, and it's undevelopable because there's an underground fire that's been burning for, 80 years?
Great.
It's amazing. The good news is that pollution can be cleaned. Economies can be turned around with the right political will and leadership. And I've seen this in many cities. Prior to working in agriculture, I dealt a lot with mayors on this issue of redevelopment. And another positive out there in redeveloping cities is that it creates jobs and improves the tax base. And the best thing, and something we really need today, it's a bipartisan issue that can bring both sides of the aisle together. That's something that's very rare in today's political climate.
You know, an interesting point about dying cities, and I don't think Louisville is a dying city, but it is a city that could use more jobs. And one of the interesting things about Louisville, and I don't know how on top of the story you were last week, Robert, but Ford made this announcement about their Model T moment.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it had to do with manufacturing techniques and updated high-tech manufacturing. And the good news is that they were going to bring 2,200 jobs to Louisville, to the Kentucky car plant that Ford has there. Here's the bad news about that. That sounds like they're running the plant at near capacity, and they're doing it at just 2,200 workers. It was not long ago that that plant hired 4,500 workers, making the Escape and the Corsair. Mm-hmm. So that plant is going to be working again, kind of at full throttle, hopefully, if they sell enough of these.
With half the workers.
With half the workers. And that's a problem. And when you talk about bipartisanship and hopefully, you know, Congress doing something, this is why it's so important that we do get battery plants here in the U.S. because we need all the jobs we can get, because the auto industry is going to be employing fewer people moving forward.
Well, I could say the same thing in the steel industry. The Southworks plant used to employ 30,000 people. I think it runs now at 6,000. You know, and I think that's also the big myth, is that before, manufacturing created lots of jobs, but technology has been infused in everything, and robotics and AI and automation. And so we can do a lot more with a lot less people. So manufacturing doesn't produce the kinds of jobs that it used to in the past. And again, another example of a city that went into a death spiral but recovered is Motor City, Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, it had a population. Do you know what its population was at the peak?
I don't. Was it like 2.3 million?
Very close. It was 1.85 million, and then it lost 65% of the population.
Wow.
Isn't that huge? And in 2013, it filed the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history, which is, so not only did it lose people, but it lost, you know, its bond rating and economic status. But today, there's been a tremendous investment in technology, mobility, battery storage and production, like you mentioned earlier, real estate, revising parts of the city. And it's also anchored by institutions like Wayne State University, the Detroit Medical Center. The parts of the auto industry are still there, the Renaissance Center down by the river. And they've got a lot of thriving sports facilities down there. So things can turn around, and I think Detroit is a good example of how things can get terrible, but they can also rebound. A city I really like as a great example is Akron, Ohio. Do you know why Akron was so important to the auto industry?
I thought it was tires.
Exactly. It was the rubber capital of the world. It once had as many as 50 tire manufacturing companies. And by 1980, most left. Yep. And Goodyear is like the major remaining one. And instead, leadership there said, instead of chasing old jobs, they reinvented themselves as the polymer and advanced materials hub with the Goodyear / University of Akron Polymer Research Center leading the way. And they've had some really cool innovations out of there. Do you know what an elastomer is by any chance?
I do not, Jill.
Elastomers are a variation of a polymer, but if you've ever seen an ATM, it has that hard shell on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
That's an elastomer, and okay. That was developed at this Akron Polymer Research Center. And that's a great example of not trying to go chase the old way things were done, but try to come in and find something new and create something that attracts new investment and new talent. So that was sort of my thoughts out there, Tom, is that there's some good examples of legacy cities that are turning around. And, you know, back to the original question, do you think mobility, as it becomes more sustainable, less emissions and cleaner factories, are we creating a transportation divide in our country? Are we going to see old technology in these dying, shrinking areas and new technology in the more progressive ones?
I think we might, actually. And I think that ultimately, if ride hailing is going to become a bigger thing, especially autonomous ride hailing, they're going to want to charge a fair amount for it. So it may not be the affordable answer to owning a car that people think it will be.
Right. Well, you know, and I think the other thing that, you know, we haven't discussed is the idea of weather. You know, you talked about San Francisco and Austin getting all this great new technology and ride hailing and Waymo and, you know, Tesla's piloting their the driverless taxis.
Yeah.
And we don't get that in the Midwest because of weather. Our infrastructure is bad. It's constantly under construction because of the constant heat and cold. And so I think that there's going to be an additional divide that's going to be between the Sun Belt and the Rust Belt of, you know, who can get that tech.
Well, at least initially. I mean, that is a technological barrier. And hopefully we breach that.
Well, hopefully, but they haven't even started testing.
Yeah, or does that create an opportunity for innovation? You know, the great thing about gas is it works everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But these renewable and sustainable technologies, as you said, Jill, are very weather and climate dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe something new will come out of that. Can we use these old factories as a way to build new technologies? Like, you know, Michigan made a considerable investment into battery technology and took some of those older areas and converted them. So, you know, Every challenge creates an opportunity. So I think we have a lot of these cities that are shrinking. And, you know, this is a global issue. It's not here in the States. I was just reading about Japan, how the population is getting older,
mm-hmm.
and it's more expensive to live there. People are having less children, so they're getting an older population with less new births. So there's some serious problems out there that we're going to have to start addressing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Robert, we've run out of time, but give us a final thought on this whole counter urbanization situation?
So I would say that these cities declined over decades, and it's going to take time to revitalize them. It's not going to happen overnight. But with ingenuity and sustainable innovation, I really believe there's hope to turn a challenge into a great opportunity.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for 15 years of one of the most worthy to listen to podcasts out there.
Well, thank you for having me on, and Jill, it's always good to hear.
All right, we'll talk again soon. That was Robert Colangelo of the Green Sense Show. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom. She is Jill. We just talked about some cool stuff with Robert Colangelo. I'm going to miss his podcast.
Yes.
I'm going to miss being a part of that because I felt smart being a part of that.
Wait, aren't you smart regardless?
Reasonably.
Okay.
I guess.
Just to verify.
But you know, if you're involved in a smart conversation, you start to feel a little smug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. It's quiz time, but you probably want to talk a little social media first.
I do.
All right.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the things. I've been doing a real big push on Instagram lately. I just topped 5,000 followers, so thanks to everybody.
Where is this?
On Instagram.
Okay.
So thanks to everybody who followed. I was like at 999 for like ever, and I was just like, come on, I just need a couple more people. So thank you for those who pushed me over the edge. So now I'm starting to work on my YouTube. So if you haven't subscribed to me on YouTube, I would love a subscription there at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag CarDuJour.
Also, you can watch the podcast on YouTube.
You can watch it on my YouTube channel
if you want to watch that,
if you would like to see what Tom and I actually look like.
Also, you should follow us on Facebook, the Car Stuff Podcast on Facebook, where we post pictures of the donuts. You can rate the donuts.
You can, and the cinnamon always gets a 10 out of 10. A
couple weeks ago, we posted a picture of producer Randy.
Yeah.
Up until that time, he had been a ghost.
No longer a ghost.
Yep.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right. You want to check us out on Facebook. It's Consumer Guide Car Stuff. I'm Car Guy Tom.
Yeah, I was like, you also do some social things.
Yeah, Car Guy Tom on Twitter X.
And Twitter, Blue Sky.
Fun cars this week. Actually, my Car Spotter cars, hashtag Car Spotter, came during the weather nightmare that came blowing through here Saturday. So all the pictures are wet.
Okay.
All right. It's quiz time. Are you ready?
Always.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Power Quiz. Today's topic is Korea or Japan.
Okay.
I'm going to just mention something to you, and you have to tell me if it is Korean or Japanese.
Okay. That sounds way simpler than what I think it's actually going to be.
Maybe a little. Five questions.
Could you like to throw me a wrench?
Plus a bonus question, always related to the topic of the day. Mm-hmm. Actually, it kind of is today, just a little bit.
Okay.
You need three total to win.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
We have 14 minutes. There is another topic I want to get to, so you may not dilly-dally.
I'm eating a donut.
Yeah.
I may dilly-dally.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah.
First one. Is this Korean or Japanese? Daihatsu.
Ooh.
Daihatsu. Car brand Daihatsu.
I think it's Japanese.
It is Japanese. It is now wholly owned by Toyota.
Okay.
And they had a brief period of sales here in the U.S., like 3 or 4 model years. They sold the Daihatsu Rocky, which was like the Suzuki Sidekick. It was a very small body on frame crossover.
Okay.
And the Daihatsu Charade, which was a subcompact car. Didn't make it here in the U.S. They now sell Kei cars. You know what those are?
I thought they were Kei cars.
Okay.
Are they Kei?
I don't know.
Okay.
But KEI.
Okay.
And they're super popular in Japan because they're more or less regulated by the government. They get huge, Japanese consumers get huge tax breaks for buying very tiny cars.
Yes.
But the cars have to be under 660cc, and they're certain sizes. But this is for congestion and efficiency and environmental reasons. So that's what Daihatsu does these days. And they sell cars called the Miro, the Move, and the Tanto.
Okay.
All right. You have 1 point.
Okay. I got a point.
Incheon City.
What?
Incheon City. I-N-C-H-E-O-N. I did look it up. It's Incheon City. Is that Korean or Japanese?
I've never heard of this. I'd heard of Daihatsu. I'm going to say Korean.
Incheon City is Korean, and I asked it because it is where General Motors builds the Trax, the Envista, the Trailblazer, and the Encore GX.
Oh, so it's not an automaker. It's a city.
It's a city. Incheon City.
Well, I don't know. I was thinking you were talking about car brands.
No.
So it's just a
I
thing.
I never said brands. It's
okay.
A thing.
It's
yeah,
a things. Thing. Okay. Now yeah. Now I've got my... Okay.
All right. Well,
all right.
You, you
I got my
got
head in the
anyway.
Game now.
You got
I got it,
it
anyway. But I got my head in the game now.
All
got
right.
It.
Incheon City. Yeah. All these very popular small GMs. Very well reviewed. Very popular. Very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be less affordable.
A lot less.
When the 15% tariff kicks in on those bad boys.
Yes.
But they're nice cars.
Yeah.
And they're on the list of things that my daughter is driving. I want her to like the Envista because a year old, they're a crazy good deal, well-equipped. However, she doesn't like any of the colors.
Because she wants yellow.
And they are kind of an old people colors.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
All right, you have 2 points.
Okay.
Right-hand drive.
Japan. I'm like, that I know, because it's
yeah.
Japan and England.
I had to check. Korean is left-hand drive.
Okay.
All right, you've got 3. You've won.
Aha. Uh-huh.
All right. The Wan, W-O-N, the Wan.
I don't know what that is.
Well, I am saying the one.
Oh, is it monetary?
It could be currency, sure.
I'm going to say Korean.
Yes. It's the Korean won and the Japanese yen. And there are currently 1,400 won to the dollar.
How much?
1,400.
Okay.
So that makes like doing the math kind of tricky.
Yes.
In fact, this is funny. I wrote about this the other day. In India...
Mm-hmm.
The rupee is relatively small value units.
Mm-hmm.
So to make that work in advertising or in transactions,
mm-hmm.
they use something called a lakh, L-A-K-H, which is 100,000 rupees. So it's just kind of shorthand, like a grand, like we might say a grand. All right, last one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Renault Samsung Motors. Renault, Samsung Motors. Is it Korean or Japanese?
I'm trying to fill the dead air even though there's music playing. Totally have no idea. I'm gonna say Korean.
It is, yeah. Samsung's a Korean maker. They entered into this joint venture with Renault. It's kind of a flop. I mean, they build vehicles together. But they mostly sell them as Renault. So I don't know where this went. Although now, I believe it is Renault Samsung that Geely is building Polestars with. To not build them in China.
Okay.
So there's that. All right, you got 5 out of 5.
Woo!
All right, are you ready? Bonus question coming.
I win.
You got 5 out of 5. You're familiar with Baskin-Robbins?
Yes.
All right. How many Baskin-Robbins do you think there are in the world?
You ask me these questions, and I either go really high or really low. 10,000.
You were close this time. 7,800.
Okay.
How many do you think there are in the U.S.? I'm sort of surprised by this number.
6,000.
Just 2,200.
Oh.
I don't know if that franchise is contracted or what. And how many do you think there are in South Korea?
100.
1,700.
Wow.
Nearly as many in South Korea as there are in the U.S.
Wow.
Here's the interesting thing.
They like their ice cream,
it
apparently.
Used to be 31 flavors, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've backed off of that.
Oh.
They don't use that in their branding anymore.
Okay.
So I don't know how many flavors they have. But if it's 30, I feel cheated.
Okay.
All right.
So
go ahead.
I was going to say, when I was a kid, we would go to Baskin-Robbins, and I would always get 2 scoops, and I'd get peppermint stick and bubble gum.
Ugh.
Do you have an issue with chocolate? What's wrong with the chocolate?
No, I wanted the bubble gum because mom wouldn't buy me gum because she didn't like gum. And so I would get the bubble gum ice cream, and then I could, like, I would literally spit the little gum pieces out and save them.
You no longer get to call anything else gross.
I was a kid.
I want to say I had the bubble gum.
It was so good.
What, you know where we used to go for ice cream? There was a Dairy Queen in Chicago on Lincoln and Crawford, or close to that intersection. And my parents always took us there, and that was soft serve.
Okay.
Dairy Queen was big in Chicago at the time. There's Tasty Freeze, too, which I didn't know wasn't national at the time. But we also used to go to Howard Johnson's, which I think advertised 28 flavors for a while.
Hojo had ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think it was really close to my office in Morton Grove there, outside of Chicago.
Interesting.
All right, I need you to tell me which of the following ice cream flavors is fake in South Korea.
In South Korea, got it.
From the South Korean menu.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually read reviews of all these flavors. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet corn cheese.
Okay.
Sweet potato cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet cream and shallot. Green tea cookie.
I think the green tea cookie has to be real.
Okay.
Because that's something I would want to eat.
My daughter loves green tea stuff and matcha.
Yeah, the matcha lattes. My new favorite, by the way. I'm sorry, I'm stalling, but I don't mean to. Matcha latte at Starbucks. If you get, like, the new matcha latte is much less sweet. And if you get it without the syrup and put cinnamon on it, it is amazing.
Yeah?
That is my new drink of choice. So, and I do coconut milk. So matcha latte with coconut milk, no syrup. And then sprinkle on the cinnamon.
All right.
So that one's real. You said there was something with cheese.
Sweet corn cheese,
uh-huh.
Sweet potato cheese, and sweet cream and shallot.
I think the shallot is weird.
Okay.
So I'm going to say that's not real.
That's not. Good job.
Woohoo!
You swept today.
Who wants to put onion in their ice cream?
You know, it's the one here I would try.
No.
I don't like green tea. Sweet corn cheese. There is a Filipino ice cream store near my old office. Everything's near my old office. Morton Grove is not that exciting, but here it is.
They got all this stuff.
I'm making the case for it being exciting.
Okay.
But they had this Filipino ice cream store that had fun stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the green, the purple yam? Is that ube?
Ube.
They have ube ice cream, but they had a lot of this corn stuff. And corn is wonderfully sweet.
Yeah, well, and you would think, like, cheese and ice cream would be weird. But when you think about what ice cream is, it's milk, and cheese is milk.
And so... Although they do actually use cheddar sometimes, which is really interesting.
Okay.
But yeah, I've had this stuff, and none of it is bad.
Okay.
All right, you've won. You got 6 out of 6 today.
I don't know that I've done that for a while.
I'm going to put a 6 and an exclamation point, and then 2 more exclamation points.
Oh, okay.
I'm underlining it twice.
Got it.
I don't want to underline it a third time, because that would be overkill.
That would be a little bit overkill.
There is a list that showed up a couple of weeks ago, and I never got to it, from IC Cars.
Okay.
And it's basically tracking resale value of vehicles that they list on IC Cars.
Okay.
And the drops and the increases. And I can't make head or tails of the price increase list.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why vehicles would get so much more expensive in a short period of time, over the period of a year. But the losses are interesting. And the top 3 vehicles to lose value used in the last 3, and they're not specific about model years.
Okay.
It's just those vehicles listed, the average price for those. So all these vehicles. But top 3 models on the loss list, Teslas.
Hmm.
The Model S, the Model Y, and the Model X. And somehow the Model 3 is much, much lower on the list. But the Model S, which was the original big sedan, has lost used $6,600 in value in a year.
Okay.
The Model Y has lost $4,000 in a year, and the Model X, $7,000. Here's the thing. If you can live with the political issues aside, if you can just... A Model 3 or Model Y, the small crossover, it's an interesting vehicle to buy. The average transaction price right now is $29,000. For which you get a vehicle with good range, fun to drive.
Mm-hmm.
They ride a little firm. They're a little bit loud. But they're really kind of excellent examples of the electric car breed. And lots of people bought them.
So all you need is the bumper sticker that says, "I bought this before Elon went crazy." And then you're cool.
Which is now the hottest. The value of that sticker has gone up $1,000 in the last year.
Right?
Yeah. So it's weird. Other cars on this list that have lost value, the Ford Explorer Hybrid, that vehicle hardly exists. That vehicle is no longer available to the public. It's only available to police departments. So I don't know why people care about this. This one's interesting, the Jeep Gladiator. And I think that's just a victim of the Wrangler versus Bronco battle. There's just too much of those vehicles out there. The Mercedes-Benz GLB, that was the little boxy subcompact crossover. It was always a weird fit in their lineup anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I liked it better as an electric car. The Maserati Levante, I always forget that vehicle exists.
Yeah.
Lincoln Aviator, I don't know why. Mercedes-Benz AMG GT, sure, when you buy a car that starts at 200 grand, it's going to go down in value. And then the Tesla Model 3.
Got it.
So there you go. We should probably have these folks on again to talk about this list or their next list, maybe next quarter.
Yep.
All right. Guess what we did?
We had a really good show.
We had a good show. It's good to talk to Robert. Thank you.
Yes.
To Robert Colangelo of Green Sense Radio. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, producer Randy and the good folks here at Talk Zone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.